Good morning.
Good morning.
Our first reading this morning is from the book of Romans, chapter 13, verses 11 through 14. Besides this, you know what time it is, how it is now the moment for you to wake from sleep. For salvation is nearer to us now than when we became believers. The night is far gone, the day is near. Let us then lay aside the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us live honorably as in the day, and not reveling in drunkenness, not in debauchery and licentiousness, not in quarreling and jealousy. Instead, put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires. Our second reading this morning is from Matthew chapter 24, verses 36 through 44. But about that day and hour no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. For as the days of Noah were, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days, before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away, so too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal together, one will be taken and one will be left. Keep awake, therefore, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour.
This is the first Sunday of Advent. It comes around every year. But if there was ever a time in history that the world needs Advent, I believe it is now. The world seems to be on a collision course with rattling of war sabers in different parts of the globe, with division in the international and our national political scenes, with unbridled anger over the sound waves and on streets around the world. And there is a general sense, I think, among some that we are spinning out of control. And if there was ever a time in the days of our own lives that we need Advent, it's now. Trust gets broken in intimate relationships. There's violence, disrespect among the most together of us. Addiction, mental illness, worry about our health, about finances. You know what I'm talking about. And a little respite from all these cover stories, I think, would bring an extra measure of soothing hope to our weary and worn spirits. So we need Advent, but Advent doesn't provide a simple solution. The start of Advent is, in church life that follows lectionary readings, a mix of opposites. The busyness of the holiday season can overrun the sense of the sacred. We're so busy trying to make it feel like Christmas that we lose that time to pause and be with God. We mix setting apart time for connection with the sacred, with the rush to create the trappings that celebrate the incarnation of Christ. Advent is a liturgical season that mixes up expectation and waiting as predominant ideas. We get to this first Sunday of Advent, and all of a sudden we're back to a time when Jesus is not present yet. I remember, you know, at a children's sermon once saying, "Do you know what Advent is?" And I said, you know, and the kids were quiet, so I said, "Well, it's when we start looking ahead to when Jesus was born." So of course, three or four hands went right up and said, "Well, we had Christmas last year. Hasn't he been born?" We're kind of mixing up Jesus being present and Jesus being not yet. And we start looking ahead in this first reading from the first Sunday of Advent to the second coming. And as we step into that gospel reading for today, and instead of Christmas cheer and calm, we get plunged into a sense of foreboding. Jesus is the speaker, and his message is this, but of that day and hour, no one knows. But it's not necessarily going to be pleasant. So it should be no surprise that the disciples come to him and ask, tell us when this will be and what will be the sign. So Jesus launches into kind of a creepy, nightmarish scenes about tribulation, hate, even death, earthquakes, nations rising up against nations, false prophets who pretend to be Christ, and shortened days. He tells of the moon not giving light and stars falling from the sky, and then proclaims that all who mourn will see him come on a cloud from heaven. Jesus is speaking to kind of an anxious, worried circle of disciples here who have good reason to wonder what the future will hold. Because this is teaching during the last week of Jesus' life. And so the question, when will you come again, sprang right away to their lips, because it's a hinge between their daily lot and the promised future. And today's reading picks up with Jesus' pronouncement that no one knows the time or place when he will come again. Now you may be asking, why do we plunge into these anxiety-producing readings as we start heading towards Christmas celebrations? And I must admit, there are often two kind of polls of reactions to this news about the second coming. Some people see it as much ado about nothing, and reasonable 21st century good mainline Protestant Christians don't spend a lot of time worrying about the second coming because it just doesn't seem like it'll happen that way. And the other reaction among Christians are those who think the second coming is at the very heart of the gospel, and picking up the newspaper or going to their favorite news feed, the world's problems are all signs of the beginning of the great ending, wars and rumors of wars. And in contrast to almost the perpetual apathy of the first group, these people engage in a state of perpetual anxiety, not unlike the disciples waiting with bated breath for Jesus to say more. But I think there can be another perspective. What is core to this reading is simply, we cannot know. Jesus is asking us to trust that what is coming is rooted in both memory of what God has done and grounded in God's promises for amazing surprises. Jesus is crystallizing the entire sweep of history for us here, in the astonishing promise that he will come again to bring the world into God's aligning love. And what's even more astonishing about this kind of waiting and watching is that Jesus talks about it occurring in ordinary daily activities as a place where God arrives. So don't let the doomsday cloud, drama cloud, the confident hope of the promised coming. Pastor and theologian Richard Rohr describes it this way. The theological virtue of hope is the patient and trustful willingness to live for a while without closure, without resolution, and to still be content and even happy, because our satisfaction is now at another level, and the source of that is beyond ourselves. So we'll begin our Advent journey towards Christmas today by emphasizing the gift of being awake to the now, the gift of finding that time can be sacred, God can be present with each other and with those in need of hope. And the practice of attentiveness to life around us and to where God might be in it is a way to begin to fill in the gaps so that sacred time can be ours and our daily lives can reflect the sacred. Part of the practice is to soften our focus, to let things be mysterious for a while, to be content with waiting, trusting that things are working out without the need to have all the answers right away. This is time reimagined for us. Let's face it, we more easily translate the idea of being awake as doing something. But what if attentiveness and keeping awake to God was less about hypervigilance and more about allowing a non-anxious stance for this season where awe and wonder take the lead? Time in which our attentiveness is geared to recognizing the reflected light of Christ, a time where we can see that every moment is potentially pregnant with the presence of the Christ child. It allows us to see reflections of the sacred future that is promised, but also past times when God has touched our lives. Jesus stresses the way sacred time can break into our ordinary time. He does that by showing it, talking about ordinary life, farmers in their field, one is taken. Sure, some might say raptured, but others might say enraptured, taken with the power of God's light and equipping love. Comes to two women grinding wheat for daily bread. One is taken, seeing the days of God's reign right there with the blossoming, changing of wheat to flour to a whole loaf. It is about today. About our lives, when we are perplexed by whether God has given up or moved on, when we are perplexed by how we can live lives of faith in waiting times, or times when we are baffled by what seems to be a silence, or baffled by overly glib answers. And Jesus comes to us this day in our perplexed and waiting state at First Presbyterian Church with the message that, yes, we do live in in-between times. What has been born, that is God emptying God's self as a human, coming to us as a fragile, helpless child, and what is still to come, the Christ will come again as judge of the world, and of all the world's efforts to run itself by itself. Jesus has an eye on what is going to happen in the future, but he also keeps our attention focused on our present day, on the needs of the hour, and this is what Advent is all about waiting and watching, with an understanding that the extraordinary rises out of the ordinary, and can be seen with Advent eyes. And it is even more fully seen in chapters following today's text, when Jesus goes into a full-blown vision of God's planetary arrival. When the Son of Man comes in glory and all the nations are before him, what is the vision Jesus raises? Of hungry, thirsty, outsiders, prisoners, sick, and naked people whom Jesus names as himself, arriving at the threshold of our lives, and we are to meet their needs. We offer our lives to ones who are vulnerable, because with all that arises within our own lives, we know that we too are also vulnerable. And it goes beyond our individual efforts. We may come to understand that God's second coming in Jesus is a promise of fullness of life for our overly anxious selves and indeed for all creation. When we take seriously the high pitch and awakening reality of God, we may not only be surprised, but also stunned at what can be afoot within our lives in this planet. Over and over again in today's gospel text, the words "you do not know" are spoken. And I think this is actually part of the heart of the Advent hope. You never know the time or place for how Christ may come into your life for the truest and most extraordinary liberation of our lives to take place. But the call of Advent hope is that we pay attention, watching and waiting for the remarkable gift of God's ordinary blessings that give rise to the fantastic, awakening, courageous hope of Advent people. This is a message of a world shaping, of a consciousness shattering claim, and so is Christ's call to watch, to stand vigilant, come hell or high water, the light has dawned once and will dawn once more. Thanks be to God. Now, I picked sacred time as a starting point for our Advent explorations of how life can reflect the sacred this year. Not only because each of the scriptures mentions time, but also because I wanted us to start framing our Advent journey in terms of identifying sacred time. The word sacred means set apart. So how will we engage the idea that all of time is pregnant with possibility and can be set apart as a reflection of the sacred time, like those serving at the soup kitchen? All we have to do is stop a moment, notice it, take a deep breath, light a candle, listen to favorite music, speak of the deepest things we know about with a friend. Spend a little bit of time to make life better for someone else. Any of these activities are the way we turn what is often a busy season into a journey towards deeper connection with Christ, who is already around us. Amen.